Hi, welcome to Today on Africa Yesterday. I am Femi.
And I am Lola.
If this is your first time listening to us, welcome, and we do hope that you come back. Please check out our previous episodes so you can know what this podcast is all about and what we'll talk about throughout this season. If this isn't your first, thank you for sticking around till this episode. We hope that you continue to check out new episodes, and we hope that they do not bore you. Thank you for joining. On today's episode, we will discuss about the Central African region, major pre-colonial events that describe their life before the influence of colonial masters, their kingdom, and even wars they were involved in. Also, we will talk about their life through independence, with a little bit of back and forth conversations about whether they deserve to be colonized or not. We hope you enjoy it. The Central African region consists of 11 countries according to the Economic Community of Central African States, the Angola, Burundi, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Republic of Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Sao Tome and Principe, Gabon, and Rwanda. But hundreds of years before colonization came into Central Africa, humans existed in kingdoms, and some of them include the Sao Kingdom, the Kenem Kingdom, the Borno Kingdom, the Shiliwiki Kingdom, the Bangurimi Kingdom, Wadai Kingdom, Lunda Kingdom, and the Kingdom of Congo. And these countries and these kingdoms have held humans, and for some while there have been conflicts between these kingdoms even before colonization began. Let's look closely into the Kanem Bornu Empire. The Kanem Bornu Empire was a fuse of the Kanem Empire and the Bornu Empire in the 15th century when Belailai invaders came from Lake Fitri region and took over the Kanem Empire. So when they took over the Kanem Empire had to move to Bornu Empire at that point. And after 100 years, that's a century.
Yeah, the Kanem, I'm sorry to cut short, the Kanem Empire was also centered in Chad Basin.
Yes, they were settled in Chad Basin, and they amassed so much land space because of the force they received from the Bornu. So the fact that they had more power, they were able to, you know, expand their land area. They covered much of Chad, parts of southern Libya, eastern Niger, northeastern Nigeria, northern Cameroon, parts of South Sudan, and the CAR, the Central African Republic.
Yeah.
And when it was about 16th century, that's a century after the Belailai invaders conquered the Kanem Empire and took over them, the Bornu Empire, when they were named Kanem Bornu Empire, they came back and they fought with the Belailai invaders. So they conquered them and they took back what was theirs.
This is where history comes in, because it's more than 100 years.
Yes, it's over 100 years.
It's over 100 years. So, history was actually what kept them and made them remember that this is not where we came from.
Exactly.
We came from Kanem.
And they can also
to get our land back. So, they fought and they were able to conquer. So, I feel history is something we really need to hold in our esteem in our day, like now, presently. We really need to respect history, know history, and abide by history.
Again, they were able to remember what the Belailai people did to them.
Yes.
Because of, you know,
because of
told
history,
stories,
yes,
and
stories.
Because most of, in this time in Africa, most of the things were not documented. It was stories that were told and
from
were passed from generation
to
generation.
So fathers and down
these people came back and really gave Belailai what they deserved.
Mm.
They sent them back away from Kanem and they took the kingdom back. But then they were fused as one with Bornu, so anyway, the Kanem and Bornu Empire. So that's for the Kanem and Bornu. So let's talk about the Lunda Empire. After the Bantu migration from Western Africa to Central Africa, Bantu kingdoms and empires began to develop in southern Central Africa, that's around the south of Democratic Republic of Congo, in the 13th century. And the son of royalty, Mulope Luseeng, got married to Queen Ruage of the Lunda people, and their marriage brought unity among
the Lunda people, and
exactly.
It also furthermore expanded
Yes, Bantu. Of the Lunda people.
Yes.
And because of that unity people, yes. and the peace in the kingdom, they were able to conquer nearby more cities states, yeah. and take them for themselves. And we see that the expansion of the Lunda also continued even when their son, Nawij, who was known as the first Lunda emperor, you know, maintained a very decentralized power system, because when they were amassing these cities, it was just giving those cities to a pre-assigned royal advisor, which they call Kilolo. So at that time, those royal advisors serve as like the king's eye in that cities they amass for themselves. And they also they were tax collectors that were reporting to the king who was Nawij at that time. So the title of the king of the kingship was Mwatayamu, which means Lord of the Vipers, which was very African-y. You know, most of the things they used then was very African because there was no intrusion of the Europeans at all at that point. So economic activities was at its peak at this time in Central Africa, because the Kingdom of Lunda linked the Central Africa with the Western coast trade. So they were able to trade with the Portuguese. I think the Portuguese really had a major play in the improvement of economic activities in Central Africa. In the 19th century, they were invaded by the Chokwe people, which is very sad because the Chokwe people just came and conquered them, and they defeated them just because they were armed with guns. I think although their civilization was growing and they were trading and they were economic activities, they were living peacefully, but their civilization did not reach a peak where
they were able to conquer the enemies.
Exactly. So the Chokwe just came and destroyed them because of guns. So let's talk about the Congo Kingdom. The Congo Kingdom was actually very large. It was a whole huge kingdom that resided in the Democratic Republic of Congo that we know today. They were unified as the Kingdom of Congo by a ruler called Manikongo. So their rulers were actually called Manikongo at that point in time, and they had a lot of rulers before the war that we're going to see shortly. So most of the Congolese were at that time farmers, but they also had experts in metalwork, pottery, weaving raffia clothes, and other and trade, which actually helped them in trading with the Portuguese. And the Manikongo at that time allowed them to trade through a tribute system that was controlled by himself. Later, they began to grow corn and manioc, and this manioc was the other word for cassava. Well, I think Portuguese again played a major role in improving their diets, because they were all about millet. They were eating millet for a long while, and it was kind of their staple at that point. But when they continued trading with the Portuguese, then the Portuguese brought corn and cassava to them, and this improved, you know, their health state and also improved the population of the Kingdom of Congo and the Central Africa region as a whole. Lunda and Benguela ports were the ports that the Kingdom of Congo traded with the Portuguese, and their economic activities, you know, increased over the period of time. We can also see that in the Kingdom of Congo, they were, even before the colonization started, they were exporting ivory, and this served as a huge resource for their government at that time, for the kingdom at that time. Let's not use government. So because of this, their population began to grow, because they had more ways to feed people, and they were like advancements in diets. The dominance of the people of Congo and the Kingdom of Congo at the 16th century actually expanded so much that it was from the Atlantic in the west to Kwango River in the east, and each territory had a Manimpebe who was the principal governor and was assigned by Manikongo. And there's also one thing about Central African regions: these kingdoms were actually more dominated by the Muslims than the Christians. So there was like huge influence from the Islam region than Christian than any other region at that time. But when King Afonso I came in the 15s, he appraised Christianity and ensured its growth in the kingdom. He even built the first Roman Catholic Church in the Kingdom of Congo, and he ensured that Christian activities and rituals were performed so well, and they, you know, preached the gospel to people, and they were followed up. Exactly, people that were encountering Jesus Christ at that point, they were following them up with the word of God. Around 1568 to 1569, something sad happened in the Kingdom of Congo. The Jaga people came and they destroyed the kingdom, forcing the Manikongo into exile. At that time, the Manikongo was Avaru one, so they sent him away, and it wasn't they didn't send him away per se. So he left because the kingdom was destroyed. So they sent him into an exile. And it was kind of like a dark period for 5 years. Then after 5 years, the Portuguese came with their mercenaries and they helped King Avaru overthrow the Jaga people. So it was reinstated after 5 years. That was around 1561. But nevertheless, we've seen how the Portuguese have helped the Kingdom of Congo over the years in their trade, economic activities, trying to reinstate proper stability in the government. But 100 years after, that's around the 17th century, that was in the latter part of the 1660s, the Portuguese tried to gain control of the Kingdom of Congo. At their first attempt, they didn't defeat the Kingdom of Congo. What they just erupted was a civil war that was very, very brutal. So, to begin with, the Afro-Portuguese army destroyed 5,000 men of the army of the Kingdom of Congo. And after that, there was civil war eruption between little villages in the Kingdom of Congo. So that lasted for years, and the Kingdom of Congo quite did not recover from that eruption.
Between 1884 and 1885, Africa was divided up between European colonial powers, defining boundaries that are largely intact with today's post-colonial state. And that was during the Conference of Berlin. And basically, Central Africa was colonized majorly by the Europeans, the British, the Belgians, and the French. So, talking about some countries in the Central Africa, talking about Chad. Chad was the first country that was penetrated by the French in 1891. They established their authority through the military expeditions, primarily against the Muslim kingdoms. And during this period, Chad fought their decisive colonial battle on April 1900 at the Battle of Corsair, which was between French Major Amadi Francois Lamy and forces of Sudanese World War, that's Rabi Aziz Zubair. There were two fundamental things that dominated Chad's experience with French, because the Chad didn't actually enjoy their experience with French. The French just came focused on the resource they had, and that was the cotton, the raw cotton they had, and they just focused on that, and they came to exploit that. So that is what basically the French came to do in Chad. So number one thing was the absence of policies designed to unite the territory. There was no policy designed to unite the territory. Some territories didn't have a leader. They don't have anybody ruling over them. They're just there and left on their own. So it's only the territories where they're actually exploiting these raw materials that they had leaders. And that was the southern part of Chad.
So I think the that's second really one, bias coming from France, because we'd expect if they are colonizing a space like any other region in Africa, basically, if they were colonizing them, they were supposed to totally, you know, control the affairs of the whole country, create policies, organize the country to be better than it were when they
got there. Whether or not a part of the country is bringing in money or not, it's their obligation and it's what they have to do.
I think that's what happened in Congo when we talked about it last week, that the resources they got from, you know, what they exploited from Congo, they used it back on Congo and they, you know, they fastened
their civilization.
Their civilization developed very swift. So that, you know, we said the markets in Congo, the economical markets in Congo developed so fast that it was way better than other African countries.
Yes, and that was because they used what they got from Congo. They also used it to develop
them. Congo. Exactly.
So, and like what you said, the second thing that was quite bad that made Chad experience with French bad was the exceptionally slow pace of modernization. There was, the modernization was just too slow. That it was just very slow. Since they were not even rulers, there were no rulers in some aspects. So in some parts of Chad, there won't be proper organization and modernization and civilization also. So
to me, I think that the modernization was actually a little bit faster before the French got there. But if you like compare it to other African countries that were colonized at that period, it was way slow. Like the development was way slower than other countries.
It was actually very slow. And that made it that in French scale of priorities, the colony of Chad ranked near bottom. It really ranked near bottom, and I feel that's where it's supposed to be, because the civilization was slow, the modernization was slow. There were some places that the territory was not even united. It wasn't united. So the French only came to cities. They only came to perceive Chad primarily as the source of raw cotton and untrained labor to be used in more productive colonies, you get. So to be able to, there were laborers, untrained laborers, that they actually feel, okay, these guys are very, very, they have the strength, they have the power to work. So let's make them work, and they have to work and help with the resources, the raw cotton, the harvest, and sell out.
I think in contrast with the Democratic Republic of Congo again, the Democratic Republic of Congo actually industrialized most of their exploits. Like, they created industries from with private companies that were able to speed up their rate of production of most of their harvest and natural resource. But in contrast with Chad here, they were just more of like manpower,
and they just using them, you know, just keep up with the work. So apparently the French only managed to govern the southern part of Chad, like we earlier mentioned, the southern part of Chad effectively, while there were some larger areas of Chad that were never governed. Some were not governed effectively, and some were slightly governed effectively, just slightly. So this affected the growth of Chad and the modernization of Chad during the French rule. Considering what the Central Africa region has been through before and during colonization, do they deserve to be colonized?
For me, I think seeing the arrangement of kingdoms before colonization, I don't think they deserve to be colonized, or any country at all deserve to be colonized, because if they were just left alone, obviously their modernization was going to be slow.
But civilization at least they'll still be modernized.
But please, they were going to be modernized in the long run, because we can see evidences of them trading with the Portuguese
and of them trying to get that modernization. Exactly. They're trying to get that civilization.
You know, they were not passing their boundaries.
Yes. They're trying their
best. I don't know if they were, I don't think they were trying their best because they were not exploring. They were not explorers like the British and Americans.
Probably they don't have the idea. They don't have the they don't have the resources.
I think
to
Africans
explore,
were restricted
like,
in that
exactly,
area.
They were restricted. So that's something that actually really affected them, and maybe that's what the British saw. That they were like, okay, let's colonize them.
And apart from that, it's still racist, right? So they felt blacks aren't white, so why not colonize them? So I actually think nobody deserves to be colonized in the long run, because at the end of the day, we're all going to be modernized, we're all going to be industrialized, and if we're left alone, kingdoms are going to flourish, kingdoms are going to
subdue kingdoms. Of course, it's going to be slow.
But
we're still going to get there at the
exactly.
long run.
But in a way, we can thank colonization.
Yes, we can.
At least we're able to use phone today.
And there you have it, the end of another episode of African Yesterday. Do well to follow us on Spotify, Anchor, and wherever you're listening to us. You can send us a message at anchor.fm/African Yesterday/message. Goodbye.